I'd like to thank each of you that have read. And now for the main part of the program, my home group is the 9 o'clock men's meeting at the Triangle Club. And about 7 years ago when I started going there, I heard this young gentleman speak some words of wisdom that I thought, hey, that's pretty cool. Because, you know, in your first year, you're told to shut up and listen. Well, I've heard everything that this gentleman has to say when he's in a meeting, and it is a lot of wisdom. He also has chaired the men's meeting at the Triangle Club, and I always get something out of it every time he does chair. I'd like to introduce you, Kenny.
I just got super nervous just now. My name's Kenny. I'm an alcoholic and addict. I'm glad to be here. It's an honor to be here tonight. I want to welcome anyone new to the program or to recovery. And I hope, my hope is that you may get some hope out of something I say tonight. I haven't rehearsed anything, so I'm just going to let God take control. I got sober in 2001. And I don't consider myself being sober very long, considering what I've been through. I just got off the road from Florida, me and my brother. Today is my mother's birthday, and she passed in my first year of recovery. So we rolled down and planted some flowers on her grave today. And he just shared something with me. We're from Detroit, and he shared, he remembered my mother telling him one day, and she was leaving, if Kenny come by, don't let him in the house. And I can understand why she would say that. I'm supposed to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like was absolutely horrible, going to the end of my act of addiction and alcoholism. My life was totally unmanageable, and I couldn't stop drinking, and I couldn't stop using. So I'm gonna start in 1989. One of my aunties passed away, and when I went to the funeral, I actually borrowed a pair of his shoes. I wear a 10, he wore like a 12. And that's what I had to go to the funeral in. None of the clothes fit me. And after the funeral, I went to my mother, and I, actually, that's a little before 89, that was like 85-ish or something. And I asked her to please buy me a bus ticket out of Detroit because I thought I was going to die there. Because I was doing some things that really, really put my life and others at risk. Terrible things. And she agreed. And that next morning, she bought me a one-way bus ticket to Louisiana, where two brothers of mine were living, and they both were police officers. And yeah. So I got on the bus with my luggage, which was a small brown paper bag. And when I got off the bus, my brother was there to pick me up. And he said, first thing he said was, there's no kids in here, is it? First thing he said was, you look like shit. And I was like, wow, thanks, man. Good to see you too. And he said, where's your luggage? And I said, I got it. And he just shook his head and was like, get in the car. But I was happy to be out of Detroit. And for about 6 months, I was able to be around some positive people. Now I understand about playmates and playgrounds. It was a geographical change that didn't last very long because eventually I found me again. And in 1989, I had gotten so bad in Louisiana. God is amazing. My brother's girlfriend at the time, her mother worked at a treatment facility. And after a binge, she came and said, I don't want to hear it, I'm taking you to treatment. And because my brother wasn't going to let me come back to his house because I had stole some things. And I said, okay. And that was my my first detox. And because of her mother, I was able to get into a 28-day program. And that was my first experience with recovery. And this was in 1989, and it was October, and I remember the first speaker meeting. It was on a Friday night, and we all came, and I heard this guy speak, you know, and I wanted to be sober because I was tired of living like that. And a few days later, I met a young lady in treatment. Yeah, so you know where this is going, right? I was trying to the best of my ability to follow the rules and, you know, make these aftercare plans, you know, and then one day we got caught and they put both of us out of treatment. But I remembered some things when I was in this treatment facility. I remember one of the counselors saying, if you think about using, just hold on, that thought will pass if you don't act on it. I remember that. And I remember some people saying, get phone numbers and use them. So when I got put out of treatment, I remember taking her to where she had to go. And I had $2 in my pocket. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go get me a Budweiser. And I reached in my pocket to get the $2, and I had this young lady's number that I got from the treatment facility. And I called her, and she told me to go to a meeting. And I went to a meeting, and I shared that I had just got kicked out of treatment, I had nowhere to go, and it was only two people in that meeting. And They just encouraged me. In that particular time, I stayed sober for 9 months. That was the first New Year's. 1990 was the first New Year's that I could remember that I didn't bring it in with a drink. And I was excited about recovery. I was going to meetings every day. I had a sponsor. The only thing is you had the guys over here talking about, get a big book, read it, you know, work the steps. And then you had the guys over here, I ain't reading no big book. I've been sober for some. So I hooked up with those guys because I didn't want to do any work. But one valid thing the guy told me was when the young lady that I got kicked out of treatment with, we hooked back up. And then she started using again. And I told my sponsor at the time, and he said, okay, well, that's fine. Just leave her alone. And I couldn't do that. So one day I went to visit her, and she was using, and I joined in. Now, my solution to that was, okay, let's move to Atlanta. So we packed my car up, and we moved here to Atlanta. And we both started our thing here in Atlanta in the early 90s. And then it got so bad, my family members here didn't want to have anything to do with me. And it got so bad, but I had that dose of recovery, man, you know. So I found a treatment facility called Fulton County Alcohol and Drug Treatment Center. Now it's a Now, there was a difference from Fulton County Alcohol Drug Treatment Center and Ridgeview. Yeah, if you've been there, you know there was a difference. I call this club Med compared to that. But I went there and I went to treatment and I stayed in treatment, and then that young lady came and got in treatment, and we got kicked out again. And then she got pregnant. She got pregnant. And she got sober. And I kept drinking and using. And she got a deep resentment. And my daughter was born, and I couldn't stop. I kept trying, though. One thing I heard was keep coming back, keep coming back. I don't know why I kept coming back. But every now and then, I think that's what really saved my life, to be honest. Because I would come into the program, and I would pick up a white chip, and I would stay sober for about 3 or 4 months. Then I'd go back on a binge. Then I'd come back in, you know, pick up a white chip. There was a couple of times I just came in. I didn't even let y'all know that I had been using. I wanted to hang around y'all so much, but I was ashamed of what I was doing. And that went on throughout the 90s. And I remember in 1998, I finally made a firm decision to really try hard. And I got with this hard-nosed sponsor. And he was like, are you ready to work the steps? And I was like, yeah, I'm ready to work the steps. And we started working the steps, and we did step one and step two and then step three. And then when we got to step four, and he was a thorough guy, you know? And when we got to step four, he started talking about having to pay people back that I owed. And I was like, in my head, I'm not gonna be able to do that. So I left that part out of my fourth step. I didn't tell him about it, you know? But he did what he was supposed to do as a sponsor, and he took me through the rest of the steps. But for me, the rest of the steps were dishonest because I wasn't fearless and thorough in my fourth step. So the rest of the steps really, I was just going through the motions, man. It had no substance, you know, and nothing changed. You know, I was a sober horse thief. You ever, anybody ever heard that term? You know, you You got a horse thief, you sober him up, you got a sober horse thief. You know, so I was doing the same old thing. I just wasn't drinking or using drugs. And that lasted for about 2 years. And it was the day before I was to pick up a 2-year chip. I was lonely. And I was cruising through the old neighborhood. And I saw a young lady. And I wanted some company. And I was very adamant about, hey, look, I just want some company for a minute. I don't get high. You know, we're going to go to my place, and then you're going to go do your thing. And she was like, well, nah, that's all right, because I like to get high. And I was like, well, wait a minute, hold on, hold on. I was like, well, if you do it, you got to get high in the bathroom, okay? And she was like, well, whatever, okay. And when I saw those drugs hit her hand, I relapsed. Before, and I knew once we got to my apartment what was going to happen. And when we got to my apartment, sure enough, and it took me about 2 weeks to lose everything that I worked hard for 2 years. And I called some friends in the program and told them what had happened. And they came out to my apartment, and they cleaned it out. They threw away all the paraphernalia. And I had a job at the time that I lost, but I still had insurance. And they was like, man, we taking you to treatment. And I was like, okay. And they brought me to Ridgeview. And that's when I met Sam for the first time. I don't mean to break his anonymity, but I remember being in the cafeteria and the food. I was like, oh, hell yeah. Because that's not like Fulton County Alcohol, Drug, and Treatment Center. But I stayed here for 6 days. And then they said I had to go because that's all the insurance would pay for. And I was afraid. I really was. I was afraid to leave. But I left, and I got a phone call from a young lady. I was still going to meetings, y'all, but it was, you know, I hadn't worked a program of recovery. You know, I really didn't, I wasn't doing it the way the book was written in the book. And to make a long story short on that, a young lady called me and we got together and I started getting high again. And my solution for that was, okay, I either had a choice to go to a treatment facility downtown where I knew a lot of people, so I had all of this false pride. And I was like, nah, I'm not going there and let people, you know, judge me and talk about me. So I packed my car up and I moved to D.C. And I was living a lie, although my experience in D.C. was a good one. But I was living a lie because I remember going to the first meeting like, yeah, I got 5 years clean. I could be, because nobody knew me, you know? And I'm hanging around these meeting places pretending that I had all of this recovery because I could be somebody new. And got a great job. I was managing a restaurant right down the street from the White House in the St. Regis Hotel. And like I said, that experience I thank God for, because the gentleman that owned the restaurant, he and I are close, close friends today. So, but I still was drinking and I still was using. I got a job opportunity in Macon, Georgia. And I moved to Macon with the same old lie. I was in Macon pretending that I had a lot of recovery. And I was lying. So one night in Macon, I decided to start getting high. I was running a nightclub. So I went in a nightclub and I got this big, I didn't even know they made liquor in bottles that big. I got this, the biggest bottle of liquor I could find. And I started on my run. And I didn't know where to get drugs in Macon. And I didn't want to spend all my money, so I would drive to Atlanta, spend like $40, and then drive back to Macon. But by the time I got back to Macon, the drugs was gone. So I had to turn back around. Seriously. And come back to Atlanta and get some more. And I did that like four times, y'all. I'm serious. And then when I finally got back to Macon the last time, I had no more money. So I went to the club, because I spent all the money at the club, and I got this change. And I was riding down a street in Macon trying to find the first person that looked like he may know where it is. And I was almost at the end of the rope, because I remember seeing a guy going down the street, and I turned to look, and I'm going about 30, 40 miles an hour, and when I turned back around, I was going down the road on the wrong side of the street. And I pulled over, and I just started crying, because I knew that this had to end. And I think it was only God that put me in that position, that it wasn't a car coming in this other direction, because I would have had a head-on collision. And I went home and I hit my knees and I was screaming to the top of my lungs, "God, please help me." And I was crying. And the first thing that came to me was, well, get up and go to a meeting. So I went to the kitchen and I poured the rest of the liquor down the sink. And I knew that there was a noon meeting. You know, the one that I was going fronting, talking about I had recovery, I had to go to this meeting and get honest. And I remember getting up that next morning and I went to that meeting. And I was sitting in the meeting and it looked like everybody in there had like 45 years of recovery. So I almost didn't say anything. So finally, I got the courage from God to raise my hand. And I was hoping that the guy wouldn't call on me. And he did. And I was just about to say something and I just bust out crying. And I couldn't stop crying. And I didn't have to say anything. You know, so after the meeting, you know, I picked up a white chip, which was my last white chip. And after the meeting, this guy came up to me and said, "Damn, man, I'm glad you're here, because I just picked up a white chip yesterday." And I was like, cool. And he and I became friends. And he's still sober today. And I called a gentleman here in Atlanta that I was in treatment with one time and asked him to sponsor me. And he asked me, was I willing to work the steps? And I said, yeah. And I remembered what happened with the last guy that asked me, was I willing to work the steps? And how I balked when I got to the fourth step. And I couldn't wait to get to the fourth step this time. Because when I got to the fourth step, I let it all hang out. I put everything down. And when we got to the fifth step, when I was sitting down with him, I had a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening. Because with this guy listening to me and guiding me through his experience, it was revealed to me how selfish, inconsiderate, dishonest I had been all my life, even without the use of drugs and alcohol. So right at that point, I had some direction. I didn't necessarily know which way to go, but I know which way not to go. I know I didn't want to be that person anymore. And the change started happening. I've made many mistakes. Like, I got into a couple of bad relationships. And I remember one thing I do know, and I remember my sponsor really sitting down with me and thoroughly working the first step. And he said, if you think about using, or if you think about drinking, call somebody. And that stuck with me. Because I remember the first time I had 6 months. And my boss yelled at me at the job, and I got so ticked off. And I thought about using. And I called somebody. And it didn't go away immediately. But it went away. So that November, and I woke up that morning, it was November 15th. To be honest, I don't know what day of November it was. I was so foggy when I got sober. November 15th sound good, so I said, okay, November 15th. And I remember waking up that morning, and it was the happiest day of my life because I knew I had got a year again. And I couldn't wait to go to this popular meeting and pick up this 1 year chip. And I got a phone call that my mother was sick. So when I went to pick up, and it was serious, and when I went to pick up this chip, I shared in that meeting that I have to leave immediately for Detroit because my mother is ill. But prior to that, guys, I lost my father too. I lost my mother and my father 6 months apart. I lost my father when I was 6 months sober. So I went to Detroit, and I remember visiting my mother in the hospital, and when we were alone, I gave her my 1 year chip. And she was like, yeah, right. And I was like, no, Ma, really, I'm serious this time. And she's like, yeah, okay. And that was in November of 2002. And that March, my mother died. And it was unbelievable to me that I had just lost my mother and my father in less than a year. So I was going to the airport to pick up my nephew who was flying in, and we were going down there to bury my mother. And I was just sitting there like in a fog, you know? And I remember looking up in this big airport with thousands of people and saw a friend of mine in recovery. And I was like, wow, man, what are you doing here? He was like, well, I'm about to catch a plane for some business. I said, man, I'm about to go bury my mother. And he gave me some encouragement, you know. So I made it through that, and I got married. Then I got divorced. That was hell. You know, that was hell. But I leaned on this program and my friends, so I know they probably got sick of me, but they kept me sober. So I have been through a lot of life issues that would have been the perfect excuse to get plastered. You know? But there is nothing. I keep that last day very close to me because I failed to mention that I thought about suicide. I remember when I got back to my apartment after, you know, driving down the wrong side of the street. And I got back to my apartment and I was finally able to see the mess that I had to clean up. And I saw no way of cleaning that up. And because of my job, I used to carry a weapon. And I was like, man, I might as well just take this thing and blow my brains out. I don't see no way of cleaning this up. And that's when I started crying to the top of my lungs. And I keep that really close to me. I go to meetings on a regular basis. As Ted mentioned, my home group is the Saturday morning men's meeting at the Triangle Club. Man, it has got to be something really, really important going on for me not to make that meeting. If you need to find me, come to that Saturday morning men's meeting. I choose my meetings to how can I say this? There's a couple of meetings that I get fed spiritually. And those are the meetings that I attend on a regular basis. Other meetings I go to, I try not to judge, I try. You know, but that one particular meeting is so powerful to me. I mean, you can be in that meeting, and at the end of the meeting, they'll ask, would all men with a year or more raise their hand? And it's like the whole damn room raised their hand, you know? So I'm going to give a shout out to a couple of meetings. The NABBA Club. I'm not too familiar with meetings out this way. But I live like right here. And the NABBA Club is here and the Triangle is here. And that's where I make all of my meetings. And this program has given me a design for living that works. I'm by no means perfect. I make mistakes, but at least today I have some awareness. I know when I'm about to get into a scrape because I put myself in it. But the program has offered me a way to get myself out. And in most cases, stop it before it even happens. Like I said, if you're new to the program, I welcome you. I never thought that I would have the life that I have today, especially in recovery, because I lived a lie in recovery for so long. And to stand up here and really be honest, you know, means a lot to me. And if any newcomer needs some help, please get my number. After the meeting, you can call me anytime. It don't matter. Because I know how this works. During my divorce, there was a gentleman that I was working with. And I didn't realize it till way after the fact, but he used to come to my house once a week. And he was my saving grace. Because I was going through so much going through that divorce. It was hell. Because I wasn't willing to let this woman go in the first place. You know. And he used to come and sit down and do step work with me. And now that I'm kind of healed from it, I see how God works in my life. You know? So, like I said, this wasn't scripted. I didn't know what the hell I was going to say when I got up here. I hope what I shared give anybody new in the program some hope. That if you're struggling or have struggled, that if I can make it, you can make it. Thank you.
Mr. Kenny, thank you very much, sir. And I do appreciate you coming and making the effort today.